Hello and welcome back to Big Sisters in STEM. This week we're joined by two guests. We've got Ella, who is currently a senior materials engineer at McLaren and previously went to the University of Manchester. She also has an MBE. I could say many things about Ella, so I'll stop there. And Shree, who is currently a second year student at the University of Manchester and about to go on her industry placement in July for the first time. Okay.
Thank you so much for having me, having us on the show.
Yeah, this is nice, Jasmine. This is nice. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me. I thought today we could start with just the beginning, because you've both told me that you were fascinated by STEM at quite an early age. And I just kind of wanted to know, how did you find the areas that you're in now and kind of what that journey was like?
Well, I'll go first because I'm the oldest and I'm so excited to
That's
hear.
That's very big sister.
Yeah, it is, isn't it, right? Actually, what a lovely intro.
I'm player one.
Because I'm suddenly learning from my experience back at Manchester as an alumni. I'm getting older. But my journey, and I'm fascinated to hear how you got into it as well, started with me being aware of what an engineer did. And I think that's really important, right? So when people are going through schools and the education of what an engineer does, I think really helps people bring people to the subject. So I grew up in a household where we were always very curious with taking things apart or seeing how mechanisms contributed to something that worked. And I wouldn't necessarily say that I'd always get my hands dirty, but I'd always be the why girl as to why that went
100
together.
100 questions.
100 questions, which, again, I'm sure we're going to get into it, but shedding the stereotype that you've got to be born with a spanner in your hand, right? So yeah. I constantly questioned things and I was inquisitive and I knew what an engineer did and I knew that that was for me. I liked what logically working through problems, and in school when you're sort of going with maths questions and physics questions, you're like, I like the flow of this. I'm getting to a solution. I'm contributing towards something. It was applying stuff.
That feeling of working something out.
Yeah. And I think that led me down a logical pathway of wanting to be an engineer. And then I combined that with my love for chemistry, loved atoms and molecular studies. And that kind of led me into materials engineering.
You're in good company. Because I think Shree loves chemistry as well.
Say, it's like you just took the words out of my mouth as you were describing it. No, perfect. But yeah, for me, it was a very, very similar story. I kind of started off earlier just being very into maths. And it was very just, you know, enjoying that whole problem solving aspect, but also kind of working towards a final solution in a more holistic way. So as things got more and more open ended, as you'd move on, you know, obviously into GCSEs and A-levels, I found that really interesting because it's not necessarily just here's what you start off with and this is definitely what you need to get to, figure it out. There's so much more in between that you need to consider, and so sort of having that very diverse application of problem solving really attracted me, like to chemical engineering as well, because that's the entire subject. You know, you're not just doing straight maths, chemistry or physics, you're doing everything intertwined all the time. You know, it's known as one of the most holistic disciplines within engineering.
Wow.
And so yeah, I just really enjoyed being able to sort of reach out to so many different sectors through just one discipline. I thought that was really inspiring as well. And again, going back to what you were saying, Ella, like the sort of moving towards one final destination, but also being able to use your personal experience to work towards that was something that really inspired me as well.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I was super into chemistry and that really sort of peaked in like year 10 and 11 when I started helping my mum out a lot more in the kitchen. And it was like,
oh, wow, I love that.
Yeah, it seems really, really simple, but some batch of starter dough that we'd make, you know, just very simple. We've been doing it for ages. My mum did it. My grandma did it. But that entire dough can just be turned into everything that we eat for like a week or a month just by varying.
I love that as an entry point. Like a point of interest.
Chemistry.
And it's super directly like applicable to chemical engineering as well. So it was just, it was a great segue into the subject really for me.
I think something that both of your areas have in common is that kind of, this topic is absolutely everywhere. You have that with materials engineering and you have that with chemical, because it's kind of everything that you touch and interact with is something that you can be explained through the areas that you're in. Do you think that tangible side of it is one of the appeals in the route into?
Yeah, definitely. But I don't think it's really understood because, and I don't know whether you get this, Shree, as well, but when I went off to study materials engineering, people would be like, that's quite niche. Why are you sort of putting yourself in quite a specialty already?
Yeah.
And I don't think people understood that actually, well, yes, I'm studying materials, but materials make up everything. Like actually by going down this route, I'm allowing myself to have more doors open. You know, I study aluminiums and they don't change whether it's an aluminium on a car or a rocket ship and stuff like that. So and then suddenly I think people start to realize that when you're sort of studying the subject or you come out of it and you go into industry and you can translate across different sectors.
Yeah.
I don't know if you found the same, probably.
Yeah, definitely. I think as soon as I said chemical engineering, like I was actually talking with my taxi driver today and he was like, oh, so you're really into like petrol and like oil.
Oh.
And like, that's literally the opposite of what I'm into. But it's, again, it's sort of dealing with those misconceptions and not letting those phase you almost, because you go into something with an expectation, right? Obviously, I had no idea exactly where the degree would take me. I still don't. But it's being able to sort of keep that open mindset whilst being able to explore what you want to explore as well.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about that, Ella, as well, like how, you know, you literally charted your own path into materials in, you know, the sector you're working in now. So how did you find the motivation to just keep doing that and carry on with that?
Okay, first, that's very kind. Because
honest.
No, I swear to God, it's like, I hate people who say this, but it is a combination of luck and passion for the subject. You know, I prepped sort of well and I fell into an industry that I liked and I was doing a subject that I loved and realized the opportunity and went with it. But also, it does not matter that you don't know where you want to go. Like, that's so refreshing. Like, how cool that you are at a stage in your life where you can literally do anything. Like, oh, I love that. We're going to get into
that. That's the journey, isn't it?
I know. And in some ways, I do reflect on what I've done. And I've been quite sort of strong-willed and I've gone into an area of science that I studied. Okay, cool. Mm. But I haven't really deviated. So I'm kind of like, should I have done that? Because, but no, I love the path that I got into McLaren. I think it's taught me a lot. I think the thing that keeps me most motivated is, of course, the subject I love to do. I think the environment in which I'm in is that it's constantly a performance level of engineering. So we're always constantly trying to improve products, or the next revolution of the car industry is going to be electrification, and that's bringing in some incredible material science challenges. And I think that's, you know, why I continue to do the technical field. Like, loads of people cross over from technical into managerial, but for me, I'm like, no, there's still so much more to do. And obviously I love doing the extracurricular stuff like this today. So yeah, it's finding that passion. I was lucky. I got my dream company back in the day because I took a chance, wrote a letter. And in some ways I think, oh, if I've landed like this really cool company so early on, where does that take me? But actually I know that I've still got unfinished business because I'm still there. I'm still wanting to do more and stuff like that.
Of course, yeah. And honestly, for me, that's so encouraging to hear, because you know, a lot of people would say once you get into engineering, there's either a very set technical path that you take, or you go more into corporate, or like you transition. But for me, yeah, I honestly have no idea exactly what I want to do. And it's so encouraging to hear that from you as well, that, you know, you just have to sort of take joy in the unknown as well and be able to just carry on with that. So
yeah. And that's important. Do what you love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think something that's really good for both of your areas is because they're holistic, you do have lots of options. You can go a lot of different ways. And Ella, for you, you talked about kind of writing a letter, but I know industry experience was a big moment for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Sri is, when we first met, very excited about getting that industry experience and seeing how that knowledge is applied.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think having industry experience can be like a turning point for confidence?
Yeah, hugely. Yeah. I'm so excited for you going on this journey, honestly, because it's really difficult to explain, and you'll experience this obviously firsthand, but the inner confidence that you get when you, regardless of whether you want to work for that company after you finish university, that the confidence and the sort of purpose that you get after doing something like placement and coming back into a studying environment, you're like, that is why I studied this. Or you'll have a moment when you're on placement and you learn about something and maybe it didn't click in the lecture theatre, or you're like, oh, that's just pointless, like polymer chemistry. Yeah. Oh, I'm like, polymers, rubbish. And then I'll get there and I'll be like, oh my God, like that's why I studied it and that makes sense now. And then you'd come back and maybe you'll have a dissertation topic, maybe you won't, it doesn't matter, but you would have had that chapter in your life to say, this is something I want to do, or maybe this is exactly what I don't want to do. I know that I'm going to steer away from
just that. Just as important.
Yeah, it is. No, but this is the whole learning thing. And the confidence that I had coming back there, it was like a quiet self-assurance that I knew I had a dissertation topic in mind. I knew that I effectively communicated myself on industrial placement. I mixed with loads of different people. I had some good feedback. You'll come back like a better, more developed engineer, but then also I feel like you would have found so much out about yourself. So yeah, I'm excited to see how it goes for you.
I was already excited, but now I'm just like, let's get started.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Get me out into industry.
Do you think you had that confidence shift, either of you, to be fair, when you went from school to university as well? Or was that kind of a, oh my God, I'm studying engineering for the first time? Because before then, they're kind of separate subjects that you don't really study engineering as a discipline till you're right in it.
Mm.
What was that like? Was that a burst of confidence and excitement, or was it a bit nerve-wracking at first?
Well, I mean, I'm fresh into the start of uni, so it's literally just, for me, it was a bit overwhelming because obviously engineering, you think maths and physics, and I actually didn't do physics A-level. Mm-hmm. And so going into it, I was looking at the modules that we do in first year, and it was all like, you know, fluid dynamics and thermodynamics and all these things that I hadn't done, but a lot of my course mates had. And when we started learning about it, obviously I didn't have a lot of fundamental like understanding of what we were doing. I knew what the concepts were and I could understand it and learn it to do the exam questions, but I didn't really know exactly what it was that I was doing. And sort of everything sort of being up in the air with the knowledge was a little bit intimidating initially. But I think, again, like Ella was saying, when it all starts to come together as you carry on persevering with that, it is really like, it kind of gets rid of the sort of imposter syndrome that settles in at the start of uni, because that was a big thing for me as well. You know, you're going into uni, you're going in with people who want to study the subject. So obviously they all love it to the same extent that you do, if not even more. And that, you know, can be a really intimidating environment to be in. But, you know, on the flip side as well, once it started to calm in, I started to settle down, it was really interesting to sort of be with people who loved stuff like polymer chemistry or loved working with amides or were really excited about the newest development in like the EV sector. And so being able to just have a chat about that like every Monday or Wednesday was also just a great environment to be in as well.
To nerd out and just really get into the subject. I completely resonate with that. But and it's so, you know, as women, I think when we go into a new environment like that, this imposter syndrome thing, I had the exact same thing, man. I went straight from an all-girls school studying. I did do physics, kind of wish I didn't, but it was there, it happened. And you don't have to do it, right? Like there are some sort of principles in that first year that you're like, okay, wow, this is wild. But you pick it up and, you know, there are other people on the course who are learning the same way that you are. But I went from 16 women in my physics class
You're like, right, okay. And
wow,
all girls school.
Of course, yeah. And then you're just like, girls.
Yeah, this is great. You know, this is normal. Never knew gender disparity in these subjects. And then you're thrown into a material science engineering course. And I think about 30% of us were women there, which is, yeah, it's pretty good. But then you suddenly think, oh, okay, there might be a problem here.
Like the way you were learning before, realizing that's not the norm.
Yes.
To be in a classroom full of other girls and you're all interested in that subject.
Yeah, it was a shift.
And encouraged into it.
It was a shift. And I think then adding an industrial placement on top of that into the automotive industry, which still, and even more niche, I guess, with supercars, still masculine energy around owning supercar. We're going to change that. But there still is.
Yeah.
It's changing, but there still is. And I think that was another huge shift. So I completely resonate. Everything you said is like a wow, okay, lots of knowledge needed here. Whole different shift of, okay, asking questions. I'm a little bit hesitant about asking questions now, not shooting my hand up straight away like I did at school. Definitely. But that's part of learning, right? Engineers have to continuously learn. Some of the best engineers I know like are constantly adapting, and they never plateau on what they've learned, and they always want to sort of exceed that and change. And
what do you think it's been when, with both of you talking about that kind of like shift of environment, whether that's being around people who have studied something different to what you have yourself, or being in an environment where suddenly you feel like you're not representative of everybody else in the room, when it comes to getting less, I guess, a sense of imposter syndrome, or feel kind of, oh, wait, everything isn't how I imagined it. How did you kind of start to regain that confidence and that sense of the imposter syndrome is just a voice telling me that, and it's not, I actually deserve to be in this space and I've earned the place that I'm in. How did you deal with that?
I mean, if we knew the answer to that, Jasmine, yeah. I think we would have pretty much everything set. Look, imposter syndrome, I have felt various stages in my life.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably go through many more and still have those doubts, new jobs, new positions, new projects, maybe new audiences, whatever. I think for the audience that is listening to this, and especially yourself, Sri, like going through university and new environments, I think allyship was really crucial for me, sort of having a tribe or a friendship group, regardless.
Support system.
Male, female, whatever it may be. Like you were saying, they appreciate the subject. They know who you are. Like, they know if something's going on at home, or they have your support. And I think that gave me confidence when you start to build that friendship network in your course, or whether it be on your placement as well. New environment, right? You're going to need someone to just sort of like after work be like, okay, what was that about?
It just helps.
So that definitely for me. But also, I guess we work in a subject where we work with facts and figures. So STEM, science, technology, engineering, and maths, like we are in a wonderful world where we can remove sort of the objectiveness or the opinions of things. And I think my confidence started to come, especially on that industrial placement year. Maybe if I was getting questioned a little bit more than I'd like, or if I wasn't really sure about the things that I was presenting, we're in a world where we can prove that out with science. And I got a lot of questions, right? Being fresh from university, one of the first materials engineers in that environment. Who's this person coming along telling us to change this titanium that we've been using for the last 8 years?
Yeah.
Who's this? You know, okay. Whether it came from a, oh, she's a woman perspective, or whether it came from the fact that I was
fresh
from uni.
You were so young.
Yeah, exactly. But then confidence from that respect came from, oh, I'll just do, okay, no worries, I'll do one more test. I'll prove this out. Or that you don't believe that, or you want to stay with that material, no worries, let me show you this way. And that's
so you had a sense of like proving yourself almost through the evidence in itself.
Confidence. Yeah. Confidence in the details, the data, the facts and the figures, I would say. So that's where I've learned in my industrial placement. But honey, I have not figured this out yet. If well, anyone could tell me.
That's the thing. It's a journey that we're all, I feel like it never ends.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, if anyone can give, if I could give you a piece of advice and you could give me a piece of advice, they might not be the same pieces and we can just feel a bit more well prepared for when we're put in those environments and suddenly think, oh, wait, this isn't what I thought. What am I going to do? And you have those wobbles, I guess. And I, for me, support systems is a big one. It's having people around you that say, no, you're there for a reason. You earn that spot. You know, go and just dazzle. That's what my mum and sister tell me.
Go dazzle.
Yeah, they love the word dazzle.
So when you came from school and you had that moment of imposter syndrome, like when you entered university, and I'm sure so many people listening to this can resonate with that. Like, what did you do?
Honestly, I kind of, you know, try to sort of trust in my own work and my sort of abilities, but then that kind of falters off very quickly because, you know, second year, you're applying to so many different internships, and that is very much reliant on, you know, your assessment of how you are as yourself, presenting that on paper. And then you obviously get rejected like so often. And sometimes it will just be like a very like automated rejection. So you'll literally apply, and then like 10 minutes later, it will just be like a mass rejection of you, all your mates who have applied have just gone. No, not working.
The same clinical stuff, isn't it? It's no like personality or anything. It's harsh, man.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so hard dealing with that because you've put so much effort into this application, and then just to be treated as like a number and sort of rejected off the bat is just... Yeah. It is, yeah. It was a very new experience for me,
definitely.
If it
makes you feel better, everyone goes through that, you know. Yeah, it's 100%. Not a personal thing to you at all. Definitely. But it does feel soul-destroying when it happens.
Oh, of course, yeah. And, I never applied to, like, jobs seriously before this as well. So it was my first ever time experiencing, like, you know, oh, no, never mind. I just wanted to ask you as well, Ella, like, what keeps you going? Because for me, at least, it was definitely, you know, that sense of camaraderie with my, you know, my friends or, you know, big sisters and stuff like that. Because a lot of my friends were applying as well, and they definitely had a very similar experience. But I guess, you know, you're a very, very distinguished individual in your field. You probably don't have...
God, how does that feel?
Facts, right?
Thank you.
But I feel like you probably don't have people every day who you work with who are in a very similar position to you or have, like, similar problems to you. So, yeah, where do you find that motivation and that encouragement where you're at right now?
Such a good question.
That is a really good question. God, I'm trying to find a really good answer. Like, I mean, yes, friends, allyship, stuff like that. I think I've always been a person who I never really want to, like, do myself a disservice. I know that sounds weird, but, like, I don't
want to... It does not sound weird.
No, but I don't want to let myself down. And I feel like... In those moments where you are having a wobble or something, I would constantly shift my focus, or if it were job applications or internships and stuff. I got so many rejections as well, but I just constantly wanted to busy myself with something. So I think during that second year period, I was applying to more technology-based internships, and I knew that there was something I was lacking. And so I did like this online course on Coursera about coding, because something I've never really sort of branched out into. And I think I was fascinated by technology departments of large corporations and how someone can sort of integrate their data and analytical skills into a big bank or big companies like that. And so I just started to pick up coding, and that was just something that I busied my brain with, and that was my new focus. I didn't allow myself to sort of sit and think, oh, rejection, or like, oh, another one, you know. I was just constantly wanting to improve myself, and I'm a list girl, goal orientated girl. So the minute that was going on, I was writing it down, I was ticking it off. Next thing, tick, 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 tick. Don't focus on what's happening over there, just tick, tick, tick. And I think that's probably what kept me motivated. But then it is at that time in your life, it's a mass sending off thing. I wouldn't say it's a luck thing, but quite often some of these assessment centres and situational judgment tests and stuff, one will click. And that's all it takes. It's just one. So, you know, get them out there and pick yourself up, and you learn about yourself. Mine was lists. Mine was goals, whatever. But just always think onto the next thing, and then one will stick, and that'll be it. And that's all you need.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, the feeling when the penny did drop, it was like, oh my God, finally. Like, yes. You know, it was such a relief seeing that email. But yeah, I definitely get everything that you said.
When it came to like exploring placement opportunities, what were you looking for when you were thinking, what kind of places would I like to experience? What kind of, was there something you had in mind, or were you just thinking, I'm in the exploration zone, I want to try out something as far away from academia as I can? What kind of things were you thinking?
Yeah, so I mean, I asked myself this exact same question like at the end of year one when I was applying. I actually initially was on a different course like scheme entirely. So in first year, my like actual program was to do a year abroad in Germany. That was something that really intrigued me, because initially I was into sort of alternative energy and sort of the automobile sector.
This girl has so many strings to her bow. Honestly, I'm like, wow, I'm so impressed.
And also, honestly,
and
like,
going
I just
through all of this in first year.
Yeah, no, it was so hectic because I love German, and so like having that sort of cultural like insight is just, that was something that I really would have appreciated as well, especially during uni. Having that experience in third year would have been.
Can I just say why Shree says, you know, I love German, I'm into all of these different areas. You were also winning.
She's probably fluent. Are you? I'm so impressed.
You were also winning writing competitions when you were a child.
Yeah.
For poetry. So you have many strings on your bow.
Also, sorry, I know we will listen, but I want to go on this tangent. I want to go on this tangent because don't ever feel like you've parked this, by the way, because when you're in industry and you talk about writing, you talk about languages, and of course you'll get to explore, travel, whatever you want to do, but there will always be a time and a need for this. Don't like feel like you're closing one door just to pursue maybe chem-eng. You can always pick this up. And I'm sitting on the other side of the fence now where I'm employing people, and the more they talk about what they've written or what they've explored or their different languages, I'm like, wow, this is such a better candidate. Let's get them in, see what kind of they can bring to the company. But anyway, sorry, carry on.
Good. But no, I definitely get what you're saying. And I think I wanted to say something along the lines of that as well, in that, you know, being someone who's not a man in a very, very, you know, male dominated field, I think it is a lot about bringing out your personality to the role as well. So, you know, to be a good engineer, you don't have to be stereotypically like more masculine. You know, that's not what it's
great
about.
Point.
Right?
So glad we're going down this road.
And it's it's just sometimes when you talk to people and then, you know, someone will be like, not to stereotype, but if you talk to someone and they're super dry and they just spit out facts and figures, you sort of have an image in your head, like an idea in your head of, yeah, they've got it, they know what they're doing. But that's not necessarily the case, you know? And you can be an amazing engineer.
So many ways we could talk about that.
Exactly.
Honestly, I'm like, okay, so long.
The points are like clicking, the cogs whirring, all good. But yeah, you know, you can also be an engineer and like, you know, wear a full set, matching outfit, matching nails, heels, get your, gorgeous.
I look right at the camera when I do
exactly. And I think trying to change that sort of perception in your head is like really important as well. Because especially going through first year, I was definitely like sort of working towards an ideal of, okay, we need to have a list of things that we need to do, we need to get them all done, have like a perfect work schedule, and trying to achieve that balance of like what I actually liked and what I wanted to do, but also being a good engineer, was something that was a lot more difficult than I thought it was, actually.
Oh god, yeah.
Ella, you've spoken before about being a bit of a girl's girl in the engineering world. And it is kind of a brave and a bold move, because there can be a temptation to adhere to, as you were saying, that kind of masculine side, to kind of to communicate in the same way.
Yeah.
How was that journey for you? Have you ever felt tempted to adhere to that way?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, that first placement year that I did catapulted into McLaren, you know, like a sexy performance.
I saw the car like whiz in front of me like an advert then.
Yeah.
On the corner.
It was like that. My flipping interview. I was, you know, know, in a glass elevator, traveling underground, like over a lake.
And oh my gosh!
The building was wild. The building is wild, and you're sort of blinded by all of this, and you think, right, okay, I'm here now. Mm-hmm. I miraculously managed to get through that interview. They've offered me a position. Okay. In this environment, let's completely change who I am. Let's be this macho person who you know, I was like, I've got to show my worth. I've got to fit in with my environment. I've got to almost like match the product. Like I was like, you know, this is the way I had to be. And we're fueled by a stereotype of what we deem an engineer to be. So whether that be sort of loud or aggressive, especially in the environment that I was in. You sort of change that, or you think that's what's going to make you successful and quickly learn. I mean, you're already light years ahead of me, the fact that you're sort of so self-aware of it now, but I quickly learned that you can't be like that. And it's not just because of the product you're working on or the environment you're in. The best engineer you can be is by embracing your individuality. And we really need to change the narrative and the stereotype of that today, because it is influencing people's decisions. It's influencing
100%,
especially where young girls and boys, where they're deciding to put their career path down. We need to sort of shred those stereotypes. So quickly learned that it's not about fitting your environment. It's actually how you operate as a person. So I quickly dropped that harsh exterior. I was like, I'm totally fine with wearing
pink nails. Could you not keep
it up? No, it was exhausting. Oh my God. I was like, curl my hair once. I was like, oh, thank God for that. And unleash.
It is interesting because you said earlier as well that kind of there is an expectation that you kind of grew up with a spanner in your hand and like you're in the garage in overalls from like a young age. People imagine, oh, if you're in that environment and you're a girl, you must be a particular type of person. But there is something very important about any field which is not, has not got a good representation across the board, and it's just dominated by one type of person. It's not kind of getting more diverse or intersectional if everyone changes to be exactly like that when they in. If they change who they are to just be accepted, that's actually not progress.
Exactly. And I think I noticed a lot as well, you know, something as simple as like doing interview prep or like a group workshop, you would kind of obviously be given like a mold of how you should be and how you should act. And it was definitely a lot more like, you know, gravitating towards use extremely formal language, like, you know, how you're supposed to sit, how you're supposed to carry yourself. And I'm like, but this is all taking away so much from, you know, who you are.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about, you know, a problem with like an experienced engineer. So, you know, for my interview that did click, I had an interview with the R&D director of the entire facility, actually. And it was very intimidating.
That's research and development, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry, a research and development. And so initially it was quite intimidating, but after a point, you know, I just started chatting about him on projects that they were working on. And we actually overran by like half an hour just because we were talking about the work that they were doing.
That's when you know it's good.
Time is flying. Wow. It's like fear like turns into that sort of excitement. And I think to be able to do that, you need to be comfortable in your own skin.
Fully.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Ella, I wanted to ask you as well, you know, you've obviously talked to loads of kids trying to get into engineering, like in school and obviously in uni as well. Do you think there's a sort of like deterrence based off of like a stereotypical mold that they believe they would have to fit into or that they believe they'd have to see?
I do think there's still a lot of space that things we can do in that space, because I notice a shift, especially with young girls, going from primary school to secondary school, where in primary school age, so we're talking what, 9-10 years old, which is when they're leaving that first stage of education, and they're big thinkers or creative thinkers. They're like, I want to be an astronaut, or I want to create the cure for cancer and stuff. And you're like, yes, I love this. Like, and then suddenly there's something that happens when they go to secondary education, and it's becoming, I don't know, very real, or it's very visual. Maybe that's the age they start to get phones if they're sort of living further away from school. I haven't worked it out yet, but there is a shift where suddenly it goes from astronaut to you know, Marie Curie levels of ambition, and then it's, oh, I want to be famous on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's so interesting to me, like, how has that happened? And obviously, each to their own, everyone.
There's a huge drop-off, isn't there, in STEM it interest is. When you're at high school. That's when people start to drop their yeah. subjects.
Young boys, it tends to not drop off as much, or they... it takes them slightly later, and we capture that before GCSE choices. But something I'm noticing definitely now is that it's very visual, and I'm lucky that I work for a brand that is everywhere, and it's a product that people sort of get excited by, and that's why I really try and use it to be a STEM piece, because this is science, this is technology, but it helps, right, when you're showing off a supercar. But that, to me, is starting to be very, very visual. So what we're doing on social media is what we're doing on marketing campaigns. When companies are asking me, oh, where's the gap? You know, how can we attract talent? I'm like, have you got an Instagram page? And they're like, no. Like, no, absolutely not.
And like, you're like, that's where they are.
They are all there. TikTok? What is that? They're there.
I thought you were saying TikTok. It's about time. Very sassy.
Honestly, it's a movement, but instead of corporations being like, oh no, don't use TikTok in the office, they actually need to sort of help blur that.
Yeah.
How are they going to do recruitment campaigns? Getting people on TikTok, it's a whole different world, and we need to be inclusive of that and start thinking more openly like that. That's why amazing minds like Sri coming into the industry is going to fix all this.
Oh my God. Wow.
No pressure.
Ooh, no pressure.
Sorry, I think I've just... Oh, compliment from Ella. Wow, okay. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so true, I think, that kind of... that there is a problem in reaching a certain age, and then suddenly people start to say things like, I hate maths, I'm really bad at maths. And it's kind of figuring out where the kind of... where the excitement's gone out of it. Where the big dreams get detached from the subjects being the route to the big dreams. For both of you, what were your favorite subjects, just out of interest? Were they STEM subjects at high school? Because Shri, I feel like you can do everything. So
no, oh my goodness. So true.
I did actually want to like ask, because I know you love chemistry, but you were also an incredible writer, especially in poetry. Like, how did you start to be to think, okay, I know you want to make a big impact, a positive impact. How did you come to, okay, this is the route I'm going to go down, when you had kind of a few options on your plate?
More than a few, Jasmine. I was like, she's superwoman over here.
Just a little bit. But no, yeah, I think, again, that sense of sort of not really fitting into like a rigid structure. So sort of just seeing what I enjoyed and then seeing where that took me, instead of, oh, I want to do this, so I need to do this.
Okay.
So yeah, I was really into, you know, poetry and like story writing, storytelling from a very young age. Quite dramatic child, but I feel like that's how you should be, you know? Like, it's like whenever I started talking and like, you know, people would meet up at like family friends functions and stuff like that. People who had like gotten off to like start getting ready, put their shoes back on, just come back, sit down. No, she started. We're not leaving anytime soon. It's all good.
Maybe forever hold on to your dramatic child, Shri. Like, you. I feel that's who you are. And if that's going to create beautiful poems, let's hear it.
Oh, bring that dramatic child to engineering.
Yeah, what was it? Like you'd like to say, Ella, put the sass in engineering. I love that.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. But yeah, I think, again, my interest in research and development sort of links back to that as well, because... you know, it's a very, especially my placement that I'm doing right now, it's in fast moving consumer goods. So that's things like, you know, personal care products, laundry, and stuff like that. And so in that space, you're doing a lot of advanced technical development, but you have super tight profit margins. It's, you know, very different to the space that you're working in, but it's got its own challenges in that you have to think very creatively, but you don't have much room to move within.
Yeah.
So how do you do that? You know, that sort of innovation and that sort of initial development of those abstract ideas that you work with, that's basically all that I'll be doing next year, hopefully.
And so interesting.
It is,
yeah. I think sort of taking that analytical sense of, you know, math, science and engineering and applying that in a very creative aspect is something that I've really enjoyed. And so, you know, whilst English was something that I'd enjoyed for a long time, I think I wanted to have like a sort of analytical outreach with how I use that creativity. And so, yeah, STEM and chemical engineering was perfect.
That's really cool. And do you feel like going into this placement, I know studying chemical engineering, and I had the same materials engineering, like you pick up different modules that kind of prep you for industry. But what kind of things are you looking forward to learning about industry that isn't something that you learn in a lecture theatre? Like, what kind of things are you like, oh, I'm really excited to see how companies do this? Or
yeah, so I mean, well, exactly where I'm going for my placement, they work with, you know, laundry detergents and that kind of thing. But they also work with NASA on their laundry detergent like project. So it's like, you know, when I first heard about that, I was like, how does that even work?
I see what you mean about being creative now.
Yeah, it's like,
this is like mental.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's like, it's literally, it sounds like something that like a 4-year-old kid would say, like, you know, oh, take some laundry, make it interesting. Yeah, let's work with rockets too. But like, that's actually what they're doing.
How does it relate? Yeah, you're going to find out. Oh my God.
Exactly. And, you know, when I was talking with the R&D director as well in my interview, he was saying, it's interesting that you mentioned that because I just played a football game with the guy who sent off the samples to NASA. And I was like, sorry, say that again? Like, you're so casual about it. How?
This is going to be you.
I see why you're so excited.
Yeah, this is going to be you.
Honestly, and I think trying to see exactly where that sort of diversity in the innovation lies would be super interesting. Because right now, obviously, we've just learned fundamental chemical engineering, maths, and how that relates to what we're doing, and physics and chemistry. But applying that in a more, you know, real world setting and tackling big problems like, you know, low water wastage, obviously climate crisis. Ella, you're probably doing a lot of work in that sector right now as well. I think seeing exactly where that link lies and also seeing where my role as an engineer would fall in exactly would be something that would give me a lot more clarity as well.
Yeah. So we're running out of time. Already?
No way. I know. Are you serious?
That I'm is completely flown. Serious.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness, I'm shocked.
I know. I did want to ask you something, Ella, just quickly, in return to what you were saying, Shri. And you have told me before that a really great thing for you going into industry and then kind of learning and taking back to uni was this idea of you actually don't need to be afraid to fail things, as academia, it can really, like, you can't fail things, essentially. You have to pass all your classes. And I really loved how you framed that as, like, a lesson that's so positive, and that when you're in the real world to create solutions,
you have to
learn how to do that.
It's something that I noticed when I came out of the education system. You're taught to think that you have to perform every exam, get the grades, you have to be on job 24/7. And it trains you to fear failure. And I think as engineers, scientists, researchers, we really need to embrace failure. And that's something that if I could, you know, talk to my 12-year-old self, as they say, like, what advice would you give? Honesty, to not be afraid of failure, because in industry, in high-performing environments, you have to fail fast and learn quicker. How do you pick yourself back up from it? If you had a test that the results came back and they weren't what you're expecting, how are you going to present that back? What lessons learned? How are you going to carry that forward? It's all part of how industry is moving. And it was something I had to learn on job, and it was something that kept me up at night before that first sort of, I got specimens back and they weren't quite what I expected. Yeah. And I was like, all night, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then, of course, the moment came where I had that meeting and it was so normal. They're like, yeah, brilliant learning. So we'll repeat the test. And I was like, we'll repeat the test. We'll just repeat the test. And it was this relief. I was like, oh my God, that's something I've been holding on for like my entire...
Nervous. Yes. So nervous about.
Fear of failure. We need to shred it, because engineers and scientists need failure to learn, to improve, to enhance. It's what we do. So,
and that's such a comfort, yes, I think, for people who are yet to get there as well. And this kind of really neatly brings me to the last question, which I ask everybody who is a guest on Big Sisters in STEM. And you kind of just referenced it there. It was, if you could give a piece of advice to yourself just 5 years ago, what would that one thing be?
Ooh, so not be afraid of failure. Read your contracts for job descriptions. Okay. Read your contracts.
Get into the fine print.
Don't be afraid to ask.
definitely. Yeah. I think when you're applying to internships, job offers, it's so easy to be like, yes, brilliant, okay, you know. It's like, actually, no.
That's good advice.
Yeah, you want to interview the company a little bit, definitely. So don't be afraid to ask, definitely. The worst they can say is no. And in a roundabout way, that's kind of how I ended up at the company that I did. I wrote a letter. Don't be afraid to ask would be a big one for me.
Well, consider me, you know, your 12-year-old self, Ella, or yourself 5 years ago. I am taking all this in, sponge, absorbing it all.
Yes.
Go on, Shree. What's your piece of advice?
I would say, yeah, definitely. I think not being scared of failure is something that is very important, especially in that stage of, you know, applying to uni and then going through like A-levels and everything. So much can go, you know, wrong. But then also it will just work out in the end. Like I am a firm believer in the fact that everything happens for a reason.
Yes.
And even if, you know, you can't see it, it will just end up working out in your favor in the end. So I think being able to enjoy and trust that process. So, you know, I'll have days where I'm like, I'll go in for a big meeting or, you know, even for this podcast, I was coming and I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited, but I'm also so nervous. But, you know, oh no. I've had such a fun time. Oh my goodness. Thank you. But yeah, that's the thing. Like I've had such a fun time and, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I would have been super nervous, but I'd do it. And then I'd be like, oh, I wish I was just able to enjoy it from the get-go.
Yeah.
I think so. Being able to take that sort of solace in like uncertainty is something that's really important as well.
I love that. And I love that you 5 years ago would be very proud of you now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Oh, thanks, guys.
Aww. And you, Ella.
Oh, my God.
And that concludes our chat today. And I don't know where that's gone. That felt like 10 minutes to me.
I'm genuinely shocked when you see this more often. That was so lovely.
Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you've enjoyed. Definitely. And that's it for today. See you next time.
Thank you, Jazz.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.